This podcast is brought to you by Money Control.
Hi and welcome to another episode of Setting Sail. I'm your host Keetana Tiwari, and today I'm joined with the CEO and co-founder of Ambi, Mr. Akshay Joshi. Ambi is an environmental intelligence startup which aims to measure real-time air quality as a step towards combating air pollution. In this podcast, Akshay talks to me about how he and his team built his company.
So first of all, welcome to the show, Akshay.
Thank you so much, Keetana. Thanks for having me.
So I was trying to understand the technology behind Ambi. It seems very interesting, but I couldn't understand most of it. Can you describe in an easier way so that everyone can understand?
Yeah, of course. We get this quite a bit. We're a very tech and data heavy company. And as founders, of course, we live in our own bubble. But, okay, so the basic premise is that air pollution is one of the world's biggest killers. If you were to look at the statistics, it kills about 11 times more than all the homicides and murders in the world put together. About 33 times more than all the conflict, terrorism, all of that in the world, all combined, right? It's a massive, like the WHO is saying, it's the world's number one health and environmental threat to humanity. And a lot of cancers, heart disease, even children being born with birth defects, all of this is due to air pollution. It's like the whole world is smoking like 5 cigarettes a day at minimum in Indian cities at least. So what we realized is because of what my co-founder went through with his infant child, that there wasn't enough access to data. Like you don't know what you're breathing. It's like there's a sensor somewhere and it tells you what the air is. But that's like leaving earphones on in your neighbor's house and you trying to listen to music. So how do you get this data to people on a level that makes sense to them? When you step out of your house, what are you breathing? If your kid goes out to play, what is he or she breathing? When you go for a run, is the air good? Are you getting healthier or not? We realized that the current state of the art was just lacking. And this is an issue because you can't measure something, you definitely can't improve it. You're just shooting in the dark. So we started experimenting with cheap sensors. And they gave us a lot of data. We made sure they were reliable and accurate. You know, the US government has a program, so we looked at that. It's pretty accurate. But how do you scale this up? You can't make sure everyone on the planet has a sensor or buys one. That's not our game. So we started looking at large-scale satellite models. These have some amount of data. It's not a lot. Then we looked at weather patterns. So for example, if there's pollution somewhere, like someone's burning something, weather plays an important role because wind speed, wind direction, even humidity, all of these change how it affects pollution. For example, bare minimum example is lowest pollution is normally recorded during rainy season because pollution, the sort of particulate matter that we talk about, is actually physically suspended in the air and rain literally washes it away. So weather plays an important role. Then you have things like traffic. So if you live near a main road, chances are your house is going to be more polluted. Neighborhoods with a lot of traffic, especially say trucks or diesel buses, tend to have more pollution than say a rural area with no machinery. So if you were to take all of this together as individual and disparate data sets, so if you were to take traffic, human activity, population density, satellite, weather, all of these together, they paint very different pictures and some of them don't even intersect because, for example, there's not enough satellite data. Satellite will pass over India maybe a few times a day and take snapshots. But what about the rest of the time? And how dense is that layer? How granular is it? So the European Union has the world's best satellite currently for this measurement and it does a 7x7 kilometer grid. So that's 49 square kilometers, which is bigger than 10% of Mumbai. I think Mumbai is 460 square kilometers. So that's again not useful. Like if you are in Lower Parel and you want to know what's happening at one mill compound versus the other, 10 square kilometers will take you past Worli.
Yeah.
Sorry, 49 square kilometers take you like halfway to the airport or more. So these are the issues that everyone's faced. So we said, okay, we'll use data science. We're a data company, so we'll use machine learning to see if we can make any sense out of these. And it worked to a small extent. And then we realized that we needed something to tie these together. We needed a verification. Like, fine, you're assuming it's this at this point, but what is the reality? So we put up a sensor network on the ground. So we did 100 sensors in Bangalore. We started with, 40 going around Bangalore in autos. We put them in autos and went around Bangalore collecting real-time data. That's when we realized the depth of the data we could get. So then we set up a sensor network in Bangalore, and we're expanding it across India. We're putting it in multiple cities. And then we said, this 100 sensors in a city, we can correlate to the satellite data, we can correlate to the weather data, we can correlate to a bunch of other streams, and then come up with an accurate picture.
And did you need any kind of government permission or something?
So because we did this on a very small private level, we didn't have to initially at least work with the government. So we went to, we had some small investors, friends and family and some angels. And we told them, look, obviously the money is great, but what we need from you is your help. So if you own like a house, can we put this up at your gate? Or if you own a shop, can we put this up on your front door? So then we get road facing main road data, but with security, no one's going to steal your sensor, no one, you'll get power supply, all that sort of thing.
So anyway, moving on to the next question, how did you exactly start with this? Like, what is your motive of starting this?
My co-founder actually built the first sensor system for his own kid. So Madhusudan or Maddie, who is CTO and co-founder, he sold a small company and he moved to a new house, moved back to Bangalore to be close to his parents. It was about 6 months old at that time. And he'd wake up every morning almost choking, No idea what was going on. The kid was blue in the face. By the time they went to the pediatrician, it was fine. And this was only in that house. So on weekdays, on weekends when they went somewhere else to visit the child's grandparents or whatever, he was fine. Now, so he realized because the kid's choking, it must have something to do with the air. So he Googled air quality near me and it said it was fine, but he lived near Electronic City and the nearest sensor was near Tilkot. So that was, I think, 13 kilometers the distance. Like I said, that's pretty useless, right, having a sensor somewhere else. So he built his own sensor and he realized there were some local incidences of pollution that were pushing the data super high early in the morning. It died down. Something was happening at like 3, 4 a.m. That died down by 9 a.m. and everything was back to normal. So adults will cough or sneeze in their sleep or whatever. But it's children who have no basic immunity yet to stuff like this. They're not exposed to pollution. Children are pretty much helpless and defenseless against most of this. They were seeing real issues. So the pediatrician said, yeah, I've seen this with other infants around and children are coming to me and having difficulty breathing. There's a lot more asthma than there used to be. And then this was clearly the case. That's when he realized this data is just not available. Like on a basic level, it's not being measured. And it's such a big indicator of health everywhere. And just the ability to be productive, even for an adult, that it was just surprising no one was measuring it on a granular level. And that's how we got started.
Okay. And I read that you provide this data to healthcare sector and real estate and everything. What would you say is the most interesting application that you've seen that people are using your data for?
Yeah, I think healthcare, I think real estate, pretty interesting use cases. We saw this anecdotally a long time ago, right, when doctors started borrowing those devices and giving them to other parents. And, things shift this. And the parents would call Maddie and say, thank you, you made such a difference to our lives. So that was obviously a big factor in starting out. Healthcare has always been something that has been close to us. We're now seeing micro insurers and wellness, so which are two sides of healthcare. One is insurance and the other is the preventive side and wellness, buying this data from us to understand how it's affecting their clients or how it's affecting their policies and resources. Real estate is pretty interesting as well. We had later on when one of our devices was borrowed by someone, who was planning to buy a house. He pulled the plug because he left it there overnight. He looked at the data and it was worse at night than it was in the day, which means there's some illegal activity, illegal construction or some garbage burning going on nearby. And he said, I'm not buying this flat because I have a 10-year-old son and I don't want to grow him to grow up sleeping, breathing this stuff in. And that guy was in fact so impressed by the what data did that he came on board as an advisor. So he's a pretty senior guy. So we saw these long ago as anecdotal use cases. Now we're seeing interest from corporations that do this. So we're talking to corporations abroad that run massive real estate platforms and the ability for them to apportion pricing and risk based on where you live and your long-term health prospects. If you want to buy X house, that's a pretty interesting use case.
But is there any other sector that would normally not access air pollution data but happens to have reached out to you?
Yeah, so I'm just trying to think because, you know, air is pretty obligatory. Unlike water, you can't wait until you get home to breathe clean air. So it's so far-reaching. We actually spent about a year. We went to Techstars, which is a massive U.S. accelerator, just to understand product market fit and where we could focus our energies. One really interesting use case we've seen is for sustainability. Because we track pollution and air composition, we're also able to track carbon emissions. Now, if you were to look at how most carbon emissions are calculated, it's a very roundabout way. Mm-hmm. You have a standard assumption, you multiply that by X amount of consumption, and you come up with an overall number. That's not very accurate. So we're working with a very large aerospace company, and they have a massive sustainability thrust because aerospace and aircraft, very large contributor to emissions. Currently, it's about 2.5% of global emissions. But with cars going electric and everything else cleaning up, they're saying commercial aviation will be responsible for about 30% of global emissions soon. So these guys obviously have an interest in making things cleaner and better. And you can't stop air travel. It's not like we'll suddenly go back to boats. So we told them, and this came out through a joint discussion and exploring what we could do. We're able to track carbon emissions from aircraft landing and taking off in near real time. If you couple that with the database that flight control system has, what airplane has landed at what time, taken off at what time, you can create an instant carbon inventory, which enables people to accurately monitor. So if you were to buy a ticket today, at the bottom of your ticket, you know, if you get from a travel agent, it will say your flight route is generating X kilo of carbon dioxide. You see that already. What if that could be leveraged to get carbon credits? What if premium passengers, I know a lot of people would be willing to pay $30 extra to offset carbon, right? If they knew how accurate it was.
Right.
Like we tick something at the bottom that says donate 5 rupees to plant a tree. Something like that. The ability to build accuracy into this data changes the entire paradigm. Then you're not just shooting in the air and hoping to catch something. You're building a very defined model which can lead to actual increase in sustainability measured, not just hoped for. So that was a pretty interesting use case. We wouldn't have thought of it 6 months ago. Now it's looking very positive. We've started some tests internationally. We're working with some pretty large companies on this. And it's a very interesting use case for sure.
And also being an environmental startup, what are some of the challenges that you are facing? Especially, I mean, since it's a different, you know, kind of startup.
So we have both advantages and disadvantages being what we doing what we do. One is, of course, the challenge that we face is unsophisticated investors understanding, you know, few years ago, it's kind of slowed down now, but GMV was a big thing. So there was a focus on GMV a few years ago, and people would think that if you're doing great GMV, even if you have no stickiness or net income, you would do a great job. That's changed now. We're seeing a lot of emphasis on unit economics, on a path to profitability, which is great. As a company that does deep tech and, you know, environment and data, it's obviously harder to show explosive growth than a customer-based company like, say, B2B lending or e-commerce. But we have certain advantages as well. We're not in a position where we need to burn crazy amounts of money, so we can conserve capital much better. One of the great advantages we saw was the ability to get a lot of data out of India. We got an offer to run our entire test bed setup in a Western country subsidized by the government, who wanted to use it to push tourism as a health-based and pollution-based destination tourism to the Indians and Chinese. And it was completely paid for. The problem was there was no pollution. So our machine learning just went mad, not learning anything. So that's also a blessing. If you're in India where the data is freely available, where there's a lot of awareness, people are willing to help you. If I come to you and say, listen, we're doing this, can we please put a sensor on your balcony? 90 people out of 100 say yes. This is difficult anywhere else in the world.
Also, one of the biggest challenges in India in terms of air pollution has always been the Delhi air pollution that happens a little later in the year, you know. So do you have any plans to, you know, take this to Delhi and, you know, possibly consider a collaboration with the government or something like that?
Most definitely going to Delhi. We have already signed up partners, and including, you know, RWAs, people who are working towards pollution mitigation and awareness in Delhi. There's a lot of focus on that. Delhi, unfortunately, is a victim of circumstance and geography. You'll notice that, you know, most of the pollution comes from outside Delhi. It actually had to do with groundwater depletion in Punjab and Haryana. It changed the crop cycles, so they started burning this more. The Supreme Court, the NGT, have taken whatever action they can. Delhiites now use the metro. Or even car rule is pretty strictly enforced. All of this is being done, but like Delhi is in the pathway of something that is coming to you. What can you do? I mean, it's unfortunate. They've taken measures now, and hopefully it will get better in the long run. But it's not the fault of the NCR that this is happening. They've done everything they can to shut down the coal plant, to do all these measures, and still a bit difficult. So, I mean, my sympathy is with that. We're definitely looking at Delhi, and we'd love to work with the government. We spoke to someone in the government previously. This was before their election, so I think they were a little caught up with that. And we'd love to work with anyone, because this is a massive problem, and people are literally dying. We know the pain. And anyone who wants to work with us, we're always open to it.
So anyway, looking forward for AMBI, what does it look like? Will you be branching out to other forms of pollution or anything like that?
So we're looking at, so this is a worldwide problem, right? So we get asked this often, are you India focused or, you know, US focused? Our answer is India is our learning and our test bed. But pollution is bad everywhere. It's bad in Mongolia, where every child under the age of 5 has breathing issues. It is bad in Jakarta. It's bad in half of the US. Half of the US breathes air that is dangerous. You wouldn't believe that, right? You think it's a clean country. Mm-hmm. So the problem is worldwide. How soon can we help people? How fast can we scale this up? Those are the questions we are looking to answer. And we've made some good progress. We have some good partners. I think that we will start serving people abroad as well soon enough. When it comes to other forms of pollution, we'd love to be the end provider of data to anyone who wants it. Like today, if you were look for social data, I think Facebook would be your end provider for most people. For search data, it would be Google. We want to be like that for the environment. That is obviously our long-term plan. We're working towards that. So in about 3 to 5 years, we should make concrete steps to being dominant in most forms of pollution.
Okay. And also, lastly, this is a kind of more personal question. And as a CEO and a founder of an environmental-based startup, what are some of the things that you do at home? I think people would be interested to know, like towards protecting the environment or, you know, prevention of pollution.
Well, that's a fair question. So I went out and bought an air purifier, and it's worked really well. Of course, I measure air pollution inside my own house. and it's made a huge difference. I think everyone should have one, even if you live in a city like Bangalore or Chennai, where people would think air pollution is lower. I've also been reasonably frugal with energy consumption, which is a big source of emissions. I used to actually run an electric vehicle project before I started this, so I have some insights into how EVs work and their efficiency as far as emissions and the environment go. Otherwise, I think it's just the little things. Stop using plastic way before the ban came in. If you keep your eyes and ears open and do the smart, sensible thing, I think we could all go a long way.
Thank you so much, Akshay, for all these insights.
Thank you for having me, Kitna. It's been great talking to you.
With that, it's a wrap on this episode of Setting Sail. If you have any queries or suggestions for us, please do write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views and updates, please stay logged on to Money Control. Thank you for listening.